Welcome to Investor Resources with your hosts, Don Creech and Perry Sykes, who both realize that the market doesn't know what keeps you up at night. It doesn't know when you want to retire, and it doesn't know how old you are. The simple truth is, the market doesn't care. But if you care, then you've tuned in at the perfect time. You're listening to Investor Resources, bringing clarity to the confusing world of finance. Here are your hosts of Investor Resources, Don Creech and Perry Sykes.
Well, good morning. This is Don Creech.
And this is Perry Sykes. Welcome to the show, everyone.
So not only does the market not care, this last week, the market is so confused, it doesn't have time to care.
Which way is up? That's right.
So this is live call-in radio, the Investor Resources live radio program. And it's just a few minutes after 8 o'clock if you're just waking up and you're... Snooze Radio is on to KVI, then welcome to the show. If you want to reach over and pick up the phone and ask a question about the stock market, your portfolio, or that hot recommendation from your friendly neighborhood financial advisor, just to get a second opinion, the magic number to get access to the show is 888-312-5757. 888-312-5757. All the auto guys, all their calls have been washed. They have to wait another week. Have to wait a minute or two. Pick up the phone, and a painter will talk to you and tell us what your question is, and we'll be ready to put you on the air, and you will have an audience. Just has to be on our subject. One of the things that created schizophrenia with Mr. Market this week is the Fed's meeting minutes, which were released on a Wednesday, as they normally are. And at first blush, we thought, oh my goodness, this is going to be a problem. And Mr. Market just ignored it. But when the market was closed and he had time to sit down and read the minutes, on Thursday, when he got up, it was panic across the board.
A little different now. Now we're gonna worry about this a little bit.
And then Friday, it must have been drinking or something, because when he got up on Friday, he forgot about Thursday. The minutes showed that unnamed officials, so we don't know who was really talking, but we know who the spokesmen are. And they were discussing significant further progress before they begin tapering. Well, tapering, what's that mean? Well, they've been buying a bunch of bonds since 08, trying to create inflation. And heavens to Murgatroyd, inflation is showing up. And now what are we supposed to do? We're finally getting what we wanted, and we're going to have to change our policy. But we're not sure economic growth is actually strong enough to make a change, so we're waiting for significant further progress. And now Mr. Market and nobody else knows what significant further progress actually means. So why worry? I mean, we're back to Alfred E. Newman.
Yeah, that's usually the case with the Fed. Nobody knows what the Fed means anyway, including the Fed. They're constantly reframing whatever they just said, trying to say, well, I know you think you understood what I just said, but I'm not sure you understood what I meant. And they're constantly trying to do that. And I am constantly amazed at the amount of market movement you can get from a Fed meeting or just the releasing of the Fed minutes. And people start parsing that word by word. And one day it means something terrible. And the next day, well, you know what? Maybe that wasn't so bad. It's like, everybody take a deep breath, you know, but not going to happen. Like I said, these days, Mr. Market is very twitchy and it's going to stay that way.
So if you want some additional inside information, well, maybe it's not inside, but it's insightful, perhaps. All you need to do is join us for the webinar after today's show. If you have not already registered, and a whole bunch of people have, come join the party. Find out what's going on from our perspective. Go to the website, iriradio.com. That's iriradio.com. Lower left-hand corner says webinar. Couple of clicks, your email and name, and you will receive a link to join us. if you've already registered and you just want to test your system out, already have pre-show program running so you can use your link, log in, test your audio, be sure that it's all working, and then enjoy the show or come back at 9:15 to join the official broadcast. So if the Fed is having opposite impact on a single statement, it's either down or it's up. What is driving the market today? And we have more than one market. And we've got the stock market. We have the bond market. We have the housing market. I mean, if you want to go through the list, there's lots of markets that get traded around the world. What drives the stock market? One word. Maybe two. Anything? Everything.
Everything. That's a good one. Everything. There are so many inputs to the stock market. What's going on? There are so many moving pieces. Anybody who's watching a single metric with the stock market is probably not doing very well because there are just too many variables out there.
So the biggest thing is demand. Now, if you ever had kids, you know what demand is.
Yeah.
I want. You know, that's all they do. Everything. I just want. I don't care what it costs, Dad. I just want it. I want it now. Well, that's kind of the way stocks are right now. Everybody seems to want stocks because the choices of where else to go to get a return are pretty slim or they're very expensive. And buying a house as an investment takes a bunch of money or a big mortgage. And banks aren't really in the mortgage issuing excitement category.
No, they will. They'd be happy to loan some money, that's right, but mostly only to people who don't need it, of course, as usual. If you were in deep need of cash and a little marginal, you're not going to be on their list. But anybody else, step right up. But you're right about the market. Demand is what it is right now. That's why everybody wants those stocks. There's nowhere else to get returns, so everyone's buying stocks, and so they keep getting bid up. Like we always say, it's an auction market. More people want them, and they're getting more expensive. And some professionals are saying, well, that they're too expensive now. You shouldn't buy these. And if you believe them, then you wouldn't have bought in, you know, 2010 and 2013 and 2015, and everything just kept moving up. After the declaration that this can't continue, it does. And that's why it's important sometimes not to overthink it and just say, hey, you know what? There's a huge demand for stocks right now, so stocks are going up. And just stop there. Look for where you can find the best values for what you're trying to achieve. But don't start telling yourself this can't continue, because it can.
This can't continue, Perry.
Yeah, I know, right?
Well, I've got a chart here in my hand for the Shiller PE ratio, yeah, which now stands at 37 times earning. This is the second highest valuation in history for this particular measure. Now, it's not quite as high as in 81, but it's approaching the 2000 tech bubble range. Mm-hmm. So it can go a little higher, but the question is, how high is high before the foundation is too weak to support it? And the bottom line is, nobody knows.
Nobody knows. Yep, that's the hardest part. That's part of the way that we run our portfolios. We always say, you know, the trend is your friend until it's not. You just never know when that is. That's why you have to continually monitor what's going on. You have to pay attention to the markets. And it's not good enough just to sit back and say, well, I'm just going to ride this through, because you never know what's coming up. You never know. And so not paying attention to that doesn't make any sense to us.
Well, and sometimes what happens is just like what happened last week, is you get whipsawed.
Sure.
And the Fed changes its position or it changes its wording, and the whole market gets whipsawed on a longer-term basis. Maybe it's week to week, it's month to month. That does happen from time to time. And then the trends settle down and they reestablish themselves. So bonds, if inflation is rising, bond markets should expect that interest rates are going to match inflation. Why would you put money into a safe investment that you know is going to lose money? Well, when interest rates rise, bond values shrink. We've explained that in several of our recent webinars. I'm actually going to touch on it graphically very briefly again today, just so people don't forget.
Just a reminder, sure.
So with rising inflation, interest rates should be catching up with that, and bond values should be sinking. I forget who said it, but it ain't necessarily so.
Yeah.
When investors want to buy bonds anyway, why worry? We're right. This is Alfred E. Newman territory. What? Me worry? About what? Inflation? No, the Fed says inflation is not real. Whatever you think you see is an illusion. It will pass quickly. We hope. No, they didn't say we hope. But that's what they keep wanting you to do.
They said it is. It is gonna pass quickly. But from past experience, we know they don't know that. They're just hoping that's the truth.
So as quickly, months or years, these types of things. We're going to talk about some of these things that are actually don't look very temporary, or as the Fed says, transitory. They're going to pass. Quit worrying about it. Just trust us. Yeah. Like normally you say, well, I'm from the government here and I'm here to help you. Except that they aren't the government. The Federal Reserve is a private banking club. And they call it federal. It makes it look like they're government, but they're not. They're just big, fat, and happy bankers who have a great deal of control over our economy and lives. But why is the market going up? It's getting money. Where's the money come from? We'll talk about that when we come back from this break.
Go ahead and get out of here. We're here at our first break of the morning. I'd like to remind you, we are having our July market update this morning at 9:15. There's still plenty of time for you to register for that. If you'd like to go to IRIradio.com, that is IRIRadio.com. Just go to the webinar page. Give the registration link a click, and you will get a link back. And after the show, you just click that link. You will be live on the air with us. We're going to cover what's going on out there in the markets today, currently. We're going to take a look at some of the strategies that we use to decide where we should be in this market. And then we always have plenty of time for your questions. So if you have questions about the market in general, investing, or if you have individual securities you'd like to get a second opinion on, today's a very good day to get that done. So just go to IRIRadio.com. If you'd like to talk to us this morning, give us a call, 888-312-5757. That is 888-312-5757. We'd be happy to talk to you. Stay with us. We will be right back.
You got to know when to hold up. Know when to fold up. Know when to walk away. Know when to run.
That's the difficulty, is knowing when to walk away, because the stuff just really doesn't make any sense and you're on the verge of losing your money. And nobody wants to lose their money, but the marketplace, the financial advisor community says, yeah, don't worry about it. The market always goes up. Yeah, it may take 13 years to get even, but you know, you don't need your money. And besides which, we do. Let us manage it. We'll worry about that. But your mind says, this doesn't make any sense. If I'm losing money, let's remember what Warren Buffett says. Rule one, don't lose money. Rule two, remember rule one, don't lose money. But that's not the standard process in the market. It is, I'm okay losing money. It'll come back someday. And someday, right now, nobody's worrying about it because money's piling into the market. You take a look at the amount of money that comes in every other week from 401k plans. Or every month from 529 plans, or Roth IRA contributions, regular IRA contributions. Robinhood accounts is mostly new money. Those are new investors who've never been in the market before and don't understand it at all. It just looks like a lot of fun, kind of like playing video games.
It looks easy. It looks like it's a piece of cake. And most of those deposits, so those monthly deposits are automatic. They just keep coming in. So, you know, sometimes when they ask, well, why are people buying stocks? Because their 401k buys them every month, no matter what. The money comes in. And there's a lot of that going on right now.
So pension plans have to make money contributions. And they really have a problem because most pension plans, now these are defined benefit plans, which means when you retire, they guarantee to send you a check every month for the rest of your life. And depending on your option, maybe the life of your spouse, if you predecease a spouse. Without having enough money to make those obligations, they have to keep putting money into the markets. And surprisingly, pension plans have been big buyers of bonds at interest rates of 1.5% or 2% when their payout rate is 7 or 8.
You think, doesn't take long to do the math on that. Yeah, that's not going to work long term. And but that's where they are. And they're very, very slow to change because they're looking at the extreme long term view. And they assume that everything's just going to turn back to what they perceive as normal. They just have no idea when that might happen.
So they do put money in stocks because they have a chance of making better returns over time. But you're right, Perry. This is very long-term investing. They are in here for 75 to 100 years because they have to wait till everybody in the plan dies before they're done with their liabilities. And if they run out of money soon enough, like they are in Chicago and various other state-run or local-run school districts, which have already run out of money in the state of Illinois, they just go to the federal government and ask the federal government to step in. And the government does, but that's the Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation. And they do step in, but they also whack the benefit 60, 70, 80%. So the check's going to come. It's just going to be shrunk.
A shadow of its former self, yes.
Yeah. Anyway, that's another source of money is keeping stocks up. And then you have the baby boomers. They are retiring on a daily basis. And when they go to their financial advisor or to their friendly website and look for reallocating their account because they're now retiring, they are told, well, at your age, you should not have a lot of risk in your account. So the way we do that is we put a lot of bonds in your account. Now, the model says bonds are going to generate 5.5% to 7% a year over the long haul. They do that because over the last 35 years, interest rates have fallen more than 90%. You're committing a big portion of your portfolio, a bigger portion because you are older, to bonds. The 10-year bond hit 1.25% this week, and you're assuming it's going to pay 5.5% to 7%. Now, we just have a hard time figuring out how those numbers work, unless, of course, you believe from, let's call it 1.5, it didn't actually close that high, but it's an easier number to work with, that from 1.5% for the rest of your lifetime, interest rates will continue to fall 90% from these levels, and your income is going to be adequate to support you. That's a tough assumption.
That is. That's a tough look, tough outlook to take. It's highly unlikely to happen, and it was already a very risky proposition to begin with. And now with inflation ticking up, which may push the Fed to raise rates to try to slow this thing down, if it continues, it's even riskier than it was before. So bonds were already risky. Now they're even riskier. But modern portfolio theory says because of your age, you should still be buying more bonds. They don't even look at the bond market. Doesn't even matter what they're returning. That's what you should be buying because we've got 50 years of historical returns that say that's a nice, safe place to make some money. And it's just no longer true. But they don't change. Their pattern continues to be the same because in 100 years, maybe it'll look like a good move. But none of us will be here then. That's the problem.
Well, that's true. You want to have some insight on how that works and what some of your choices are, what some of the problems the market's facing. Then you should be on today's webinar. And if you have not already registered, you go to iriradio.com, lower left-hand corner's webinar. A couple of clicks, your email and your name, and you will receive a link to join us right after the show. Well, when you turn around and you take a look at prices in the market today, and you see what happened between Thursday and Friday, you have to wonder how strong a foundation the market's sitting on, because it does appear to be somewhat fragile. And the S&P fell 7.5% in 19 trading days, and it took 11 to erase that. And this is back in 14. I mean, we have periods that we go through like this, and then hope springs eternal. I mean, the question is, are we going to have another bear market? Well, our answer is yes. You want to know when? So do we.
So that's a whole different question. The volatility that we're seeing and the amazingly quick drops in the market and the amazingly quick returns, you know, we talk about, well, that's what the market did. It's what the people did in the market. The markets are still driven by the investors, even if a lot of those are computer trading now, algorithmic trading, which means it's trading much faster. But there's still a human being behind that. And as long as there's people involved, things are not going to go as planned, because we don't tend to do that as a group. We tend to get off track and stop thinking, making any sense. And then, you know, the two big market drivers, fear and greed, get in there, and they can really make the market jump around.
And people can change their emotional response very quickly, as we watched on Thursday and Friday.
Day by day, you bet.
Yeah. So as you just mentioned, Perry, your computers have made a difference. They've had an impact. But somebody programs them, and they respond to people's emotions, because those show up with individuals making trades from a fear-greed response. And then the pre-programmed stuff says, oh, look at that, they're selling. We better sell. Oh, no, they're buying today. We better buy. And so they just augment the current emotional response in the market. So when we consider the longest bear market since 1900, actually stocks were far less overvalued than they were at the beginning of the shortest bear market. And so the longest began in 39 and the shortest in July of 98. Yeah, we had some Lehman Brothers. We had some problems back there, but they really were quick.
And that's not including the one that happened in 2020, because they're categorizing that as part of the pandemic issue, and that wasn't really economically driven, and so they're not really counting that one, but it happened again then too, of course, in 2020.
Well, I mentioned in a prior segment that the Schilling PE ratio was above 37. Well, when we take a look at prior bear markets with a PE of 16. Oh, what's the problem today? It's more than double PE. That means there has to be some phenomenally strong earnings that are going to persist. Now, we are at the, this week, we start official earnings season, and companies start announcing what they have done over the past year. And the past year, as a starting point, was the depths of the pandemic sell-off. So it's going to take a company that is horrendously mismanaged to not have phenomenally exciting earnings. Coming out of the depths of last year, if you didn't make money, I mean, you need new management.
Don't know how you didn't make money. Yeah, everything's up from that level. So unless you were just one of those people that were scared out of the market, sold everything and stayed out, which happens. That's a huge mistake, and that's one of the biggest things we try to help clients avoid is moving out when you shouldn't and then staying out because you're scared. And once you're managing your portfolio with emotion, then it's always a losing battle at that point.
So what's really going to be important this next quarter, next 6 weeks of earnings reports, is to not get too excited about phenomenally strong earnings reports, but to go back and look at where they were 2 years ago and then figure out if they're making any money. Now, one of the things I covered in one of my daily emails is that the manufacturing index has already peaked and is slipping downward. Well, there are a number of reasons. We're going to talk about some of those briefly in today's webinar. If you haven't registered, it's irradio.com. Lower left corner says webinar. A couple of clicks, your name and email, and you'll be able to join us. But manufacturing is a phenomenally correlated indicator to the stock market. Where manufacturing goes, the market follows. So we're going to get some really strong earnings reports in the next couple of weeks. But if we don't see manufacturing tick up, those reports are not going to last. The next quarter is going to be a dose of reality. And that's why I suggested that you look 2 years back for earnings and see how that compares, because that's going to be a better indicator of the real health of a company.
Absolutely, and that's an important thing. That's an important trend to watch. We always try to figure out if the trend is transitory or not, or if it's something that we can ride for a little while. It makes a big difference. We are at the bottom of the hour here. Time to get out of here for a bottom of the hour break. Would like to remind you that we are having our market update today, right after the show, 9:15. You can register for that at iriradio.com. That is iriradio.com. If you're not getting our weekend review, which is our weekly email newsletter, send us an email. Send an email to help@iriradio.com. That is help@iriradio.com. All we need is your first and last name. Put weekend review in the subject line, and you will begin receiving that this Monday. You are listening to Investor Resources here on Talk Radio 570 KVI. Stay with us. We will be right back.
So I'm telling you right now, only the strong survive. Only the strong survive. Hey, you gotta be strong. You better hold on. Don't worry about it. Don't you know that things are gonna change?
Yeah, you got to be strong. And that's where the winners are going to be. It's who actually has the wherewithal to beat their competition, stay in business, innovate new product, new services, and manage the finances and labor input costs. There's just a whole ton of this stuff that allows a company to actually survive and be listed on the stock exchange. And one of the things that the Fed's looking for, I mentioned in an earlier segment, is they're looking for significant further progress, which remains a mystery.
Whatever that means, yeah.
Yeah. One of the things that they typically look for is improving employment. And there's a strange paradox here in the reopening of the economy. Millions of people who actually have jobs are quitting. They're saying, take this job and shove it. Don't need it because I can get paid more doing something else. And this is really hurting the hospitality industry. Now, restaurant work, hotel work does not come in the work from home category.
You kind of have to be on site, and they are also traditionally quite low paying jobs, and there are a lot of people that are saying, you know what, with this many jobs open, now's the time to make a move. I don't have to go back to serving food. I'm going to go do something else now, and they are,
and maybe even make more money, because employers looking for somebody to show up are offering bonuses to hire on. I think I heard the TSA, who needs about 6,000 people, is offering a $1,000 hire on bonus.
They are. They'll pay $1,000 to come take a job. It's like, okay.
Plus, you know, it's a government job. His perks are pretty good.
But you do have to become one of the most hated people in America. So I'm not sure it's worth the trip. I don't know.
Oh, that's true. So one of the things that's really perplexing for the Fed and anybody else looking at this issue is that normally in a period where there's high levels of unemployment, you would think there are a lot of people available for jobs. And that's not the case today. I mean, when employers are looking for somebody to hire on, there's usually two, three, four people, and they get to pick. Today, that's not the case. There's one unemployed person for every job available in the country today. And how did that happen? Well, the pandemic created an unusual set of circumstances, which we know. We just hadn't thought about them. For one thing, a lot of baby boomers who were close to retiring were told, don't show up. We don't want you here. Maybe you can work from home, but don't come to work because everybody shut down. And the government said, oh, yeah, we did that. We'll send you some extra money. So you're close to retirement. And the government says, here's some money. Tied you over. Well, that wasn't enough. Here's some more money. Here's some more money, and you're saying, you know, I really don't like going to work anyway. I'm really close to, why don't I just retire? And tons of boomers did just that. They are not coming back to work for the old slave driver.
And that's a big surprise to a lot of those companies, that a lot of those people with all the extra stimulus money decided, hey, I'm close enough now. I'm going to retire now. So those companies now need to go back and fill all those spots that they weren't so sure that they were going to need to fill immediately, and they all came up at the same time. The pandemic has had that effect on a lot of things. Everything got moved up. Everything got pulled into current status instead of sometime in the future, and that happened with retirees also.
Well, and businesses were not prepared. Nobody was prepared for the pandemic. Businesses were certainly not prepared for the government to say, you can't operate. So some of the things that are now the repercussions, let's take the car rental business. Well, nobody was traveling last year, so the car rental companies sold tons of inventory. Used cars were cheap if you liked something that you could drive in a rental car. Because they were flooding the market. Now that we're kind of reopening, there's a demand. I listen to Fox Business during the day, and a guy said, I was traveling. There were no rental cars available. But another one was being interviewed as a guest, and he said, yeah, I made my first business trip on an airplane this year. And as I walked in, the cabin doors opened to the cockpit, and I heard the captain say, this is my first flight in a year and a half.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, man, I hope you had some simulator time before we get up in the air.
You read the book again, right? You know what?
Yeah. Yeah, that was comforting. But if I get off the flight, I may have to wait 7 or 8 hours to get on another plane. I mean, that doesn't work, so I'm taking my chances here. Because I've been told that flying's a lot safer than driving. But let's take a look at the airlines. I mean, both Delta and American are short 1,000 pilots. I don't know how many crew members they're short, but they each need 1,000 pilots, and they didn't have a backup training program to prepare for reopening the economy or for pilots who said, yeah, that's enough's enough. I'm going to go do something else, or I'm just going to stay home and enjoy the rest of my life and my family. That's a big change as part of the unemployment situation. And the Fed has never seen this situation, nor has anybody else.
Nobody else has either. Yeah, we're in uncharted territory. So that's why we get some of these weird realignments, is because no one knew what to expect going in. No one knows what to expect as we're coming out of the pandemic and the economy is reopening. So it's all we got to play it by ear. You have to make it up as you go along and go with the flow, because no one really knows where this is heading.
Well, one thing we do know is that employees are no longer captive to their jobs. So being laid off, forced into Never Never Land for a year or better, they're saying, what else could I do? I really didn't like that job. And there are plenty of places now that you can go, and maybe with just a little bit of retraining, you can make more money. So employers are no longer in the catbird seat. And one of the other unexpected consequences here is some of those people saying, you know, I always wanted to start a business. Now, and the government just gave me some extra money, this might be the time to do that. So we have become a nation of entrepreneurs during the worst pandemic that we really have on record here.
How's that for counterintuitive? You know, we have the economy shut down. We have an unprecedented pandemic out there. Fear is running rampant, and we've got like record numbers of new businesses opening. It's startling. That is a real look at the power of capitalism and American freedom. And I can go start this business right now. So I am going to go start this business right now.
So we have the government sending out trillions of dollars. The local governments shut down wide swaths of the service economy. Employers said, well, if you can log in from home, let's do that. Let's try that. And surprisingly, many of them are saying, hey, this works better than I thought.
I kind of like it. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't have to pay so much rent. I can have a smaller space. I don't have in-office bickering. There's some real benefits here. So a lot of companies are adopting work from home much more so than was ever expected. And some people working from home said, hey, I really like this. You want me to come back to the office? Or I'll find another job. Because I like not dealing with traffic. I like being able to eat lunch with my spouse or my kids. I mean, I can still work. And we've found that a lot of people are productive working at home. So there are some disadvantages. But a lot of them are being, we're finding workarounds to make that happen. So again, we're right back to the Fed saying, what on earth is going to be significant improvement here that lets us quit artificially stimulating the market?
And the Fed always seems to be stuck. They're always stuck. The Fed's always in a corner. They, you know, got interest rates so low they can't lower them anymore. And now they're so low that, you know, and with the pandemic influence, inflation's kicking up, but they can't raise them now. Lately, the Fed has just been stuck. And I think that they're in one of those situations where they don't know what's going on. They used to say that we don't know what's going on. Chairman Powell hasn't said that in a while. And so now they're still trying to, just like everyone else, feel their way through what's going on here and try to figure out what direction's best, what's going to work. But the bottom line is they don't know because we've never been here before. So they're having to blaze a trail here also on how do you reopen an economy and how do you exit a pandemic. And until now, we don't know. And so, you know, here we go. And it's a very high stakes game, and the Fed doesn't want to make a mistake. And that's very good. That's one of the reasons they are so tentative and they're so slow. They should be very measured and do something a little bit and see what happens. And that's why we shouldn't be so worried about the Fed doing something dramatic. They're not going to. They're going to operate slowly here because they don't know where they are either.
Which probably means they're going to be late to the game and actually doing what needs to be done.
Almost for sure, yeah.
There's not a long-term history of data here. I mean, the Census Bureau has only been tracking business formation since 2005. So
That's not a long track record.
That is not. I mean, that's very little data stream for them to rely upon. But it does allow the government to see how many new firms are opening their doors and give some emphasis on that. I think we're past our break time.
We are. We're up here.
One segment left.
We've got a whole segment left. If you have questions you'd like to get, there's plenty of time to get your question on the board. Give us a call here at 888-312-5757. That is 888-312-5757. If you would like to join us this morning for our July market update, that begins at 9:15. You can register for that at iriradio.com. That is iriradio.com. Stay with us. We will be right back.
A miniature walked in the joint. I could see you were a man of distinction, a real big spender, good looking.
Well, the big spender we usually talk about is the administration or the Fed, but actually what is happening in the real economy today is that the consumer is prepared to be a big spender, and the government and the Fed are counting on that as an indication of a strong economy. One of the signs that the Fed is actually going to consider. So we were humming along really well before COVID-19. We can't use the name of the country where that came from because that's politically incorrect. So it's COVID-19. It upended our lives. And I don't think anybody predicted
the response
where we are now. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, the response to it did.
So we are, you know, predicting the future is not our business, whether it comes to stocks or the economy. And any prediction that an economist gives you, he will say, well, yeah, but things are different now, so let's talk about what I see today. One of the things that people have mentioned to me on phone calls is they are worried that household debt is at record highs, right along with government debt, which is astronomically high. Well, there's two different issues there to deal with. One of the things that was totally unexpected last year when the government doled out trillions of dollars was that they wouldn't spend the money. The whole reason for doling out the money was keep on buying stuff, but don't go to the store. I mean, that didn't make any sense. You know, so online shopping worked, and that created a ton of money for the tech companies. But the one thing that happened that just does not make sense from a government bureaucrat's perspective is we gave people money and they saved it. And they paid off their credit card balances or paid them down. Well, what that means today is that people are in better financial shape than at any other time coming out of a recession. Normally coming out of recession, people are really hurting. They want to go back to work. They need cash flow. But the government said, yeah, you don't have to worry about that. We're going to give you money. And they said, thank you very much. They paid down credit card. They built up their savings. And now the unintended consequence from a study that was just commissioned by the San Francisco Fed says that after pandemics, this is a lot like post-depression mentality. People don't know what the government's going to do next, and they are going to be more conservative. So while the government wants you to go out and blow the dickens out of your credit card balance to spur the economy, people are saying, no, you know, this having some savings actually feels pretty good.
It's pretty amazing. I mean, a lot of people were out of work. A lot of people were laid off. A lot of people were cut back severely. And over that over the time of the pandemic, the savings rate was 15%. And credit card debt fell by 17%. So it's like we're charging less, we're saving more. Exceedingly responsible reaction to a windfall. And like I said, Don, that wasn't the expected activity that they were looking for when they started handing out the money. That was supposed to be stimulus to directly stimulate the economy. And instead, people were taking care of their personal economy. And because of that, they're in much better shape today.
Well, when you think about it, they're sitting there being told you can't go to work, you can't go to church, you can't go to the movie, the grocery store. Okay, if you insist, we'll let you go to the grocery store. What are we going to do? How long is this going to last? We don't know. Maybe we'd better get our house in order. And all of a sudden, people are finding out, that's not such a bad idea. Now, what can we do to keep it there? And surprisingly, when we look at income categories, the lowest 50% in our population have actually had the greatest benefit from doling out the money. Well, you'd make sense. It was a lot more significant to them than it was Jeff Bezos, who was saving his money.
Yeah, sure, a high percentage of the job losses were at the lower end of the wage scale, so those were the people most affected.
So Jeff Bezos, well, he didn't actually qualify for payroll support.
Amazingly enough, yeah.
Yeah, he would probably have used it to buy some of the fuel for a couple of seconds on his rocket
launch.
There
you go.
Anyway, this is an area where there are lots of records go back into the 60s. And it's not that just debt is falling, but income is rising. Because I need to hire somebody and nobody's showing up. Maybe I'm not paying enough, so we raise wages. And we offer hiring bonuses. Actually, McDonald's was willing to pay $50 just to fill out an application. You didn't even have to be serious about getting the job at McDonald's. Show up, fill out some paperwork, and you get paid $50. Well, they haven't. I don't think they've raised their minimum wage, starting wage yet, but that's coming up. The government does not need to mandate a minimum wage because wages are rising as a result of the marketplace. Markets work better than government.
Way better. Legislatively intervening in economies has never worked, and I doubt it ever will, because once you take the market activity out, once you take that the give and take, the auction part of the market, what are things worth? The market determines that. What's my labor worth? The market determines that in a way that looking at legislation and saying, well, we're going to mandate this is what it is. That always breaks the market. It just never works, but they won't stop trying.
So one of the things that additional savings has done in paying off credit card debt or reducing it has raised people's credit scores, which has made it easier for them to go out and buy a house or refinance their house. So the number of people who are applying for mortgages are much better quality credit risk than they have been in a very, very long time. And so when you look at this generationally low mortgage rates with a lower housing budget, you got more people are saying, hey, I'll buy a house. But then you have a shortage of houses, and people who would like to buy another house and they would sell their own are saying, I'm not going to sell until you, Mr. or Ms. Broker, find me a new house to buy, because I don't want to end up on the street. Yeah, I've seen the street people. I don't want to be there. So I'll sell, but first find my replacement abode.
That I can afford. That's getting more and more difficult to find. And you can find them, but you're probably going to have to relocate to a different part of the country, especially people here. If you're in Washington State, if you sell something here, you're going to buy something more expensive than you had just because the prices keep going up. You're going to have to leave here and head for the desert or somewhere where there's plenty of property when prices are lower, because you're not going to find it here.
You have to be willing to tolerate whatever the climate change is. And I'm not talking about governmental climate change. We're talking about Wyoming's really pretty, but the winters there, they're not like Seattle. But if you love the snow, North and South Dakota, Idaho, much better tax categories, lower cost of living. You get a lot more house for your money. And a lot of people have moved in there and actually caused those house prices to start rising. So this is a market-driven phenomenon. We do not know when it will end, but there is always an end to rising prices. And at some point in time, the Fed is going to be, well, they're going to realize they've been painting themselves into a corner with very little option. And when they start reducing, well, they actually have started to reduce the amount of mortgages that they buy.
Correct.
And the bonds they buy, but not very quickly, because every time they just talk about it, the market goes schizophrenic and says, oh, heck, I don't know what I'm going to do. I don't know what I'm going to do. Let's get out of here.
Even though they're usually doing it because they're saying, well, you know what? The economy is getting better. We don't need to add our support to it. And people still freak out. It's amazing.
So there's one segment of the market that has some lessons to learn, and that's the Robinhood accounts. Robinhood actually takes the trade orders from their customers on their app, and they market them and make money by selling the trades in advance of execution. Well, that's caused a little bit of a conflict of interest.
This article, I was just kind of startled at the numbers. I mean, there's $80 billion on Robinhood now. It's just I was just kind of taken aback at the size of the company, but they made $959 million in 2020. That's not bad for a commission-free platform. they're making money somewhere. So
yeah, so we don't charge you to do business with us, and we rake in $1 trillion or something close. I mean, it's just amazing what people think is free. There's nothing that's free. If you aren't paying, you need to look underneath the hood and find out what's actually going on. We're doing a webinar right after the show here. If you haven't registered, you still have time at irradio.com. irradio.com. Lower left corner is the webinar. Your first and last name, email address, and you'll have a link to join us. Lord willing, we will be back next week. But right afterwards, this show, we're not going anywhere. We are going to be live with you on the internet. We'll talk to you shortly. Look forward to being with you.